Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In the next day or two, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, the U.S. Navy will attempt to shoot down a faulty spy satellite. If not brought down, some experts say the satellite could crash to land. And with a half ton of toxic fuel, that's a risk the government is unwilling to take. But critics say the bigger risk is sparking a new arms race in space, even as Russia and China are calling for a ban on space-based weapons. This hour, On Point, a satellite, a missile shot, and a new arms race in space? Joining me now from New York is Noah Shachman, a contributing editor for Wired magazine. Noah, great to have you. Welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So remind us how this scenario unfolded.
So it basically unfolded like this. In December of 2006, the military sent up a spy satellite into orbit, and basically as soon as it got there, it dropped dead. All communications were lost. The thing just plain didn't work. And so the military has been watching this thing now for over a year, and everybody knew that it was going to start coming down eventually. And now that it has, the military has taken this rather extreme step to try to make sure it breaks up in the atmosphere rather than comes down in a couple of big chunks. Mm.
So technically speaking, then, how will it be done? How will it be shot down?
Right. So there are a trio of missile cruisers near Hawaii, each armed with a with missiles and radars designed for stopping for missile defense, and they've been repurposed to shoot down this satellite.
And so there will be one shot, or there will be two or three?
To start out with, and then the military will take a look and see if they hit anything or not. And then, if need be, they'll take a second and then a third. Hmm.
China says this move by the U.S. is a show of strength after it launched a missile to shoot down a satellite last year. How is the U.S. responding to China's rhetoric?
Well, obviously they're poo-pooing it, but I'm not sure China is totally wrong. Yes, there is a danger from the toxic gas that's inside this this dying satellite, but the danger from all the experts I've talked to is very, very slim. And most of the people that I've talked to within the Pentagon think that the danger of the toxic gas is, well, maybe not quite a cover story, but it's certainly a convenient excuse for the U.S. to, A, respond to China's own anti-satellite weapon test, and, B, test out really for the first time our own missile defense capabilities that have been, you know, so many decades in the works.
I heard that there was hazardous rocket fuel, and that was one concern, but I also had read that there was sensitive intelligence on board, and that was another reason to shoot this thing out of the sky.
Sure. I mean, classified spy satellites are not made out of iPhones and laptops, right? They're made out of very sensitive classified materials. And certainly there would be a concern if that wound up on eBay.
I noticed that the space shuttle was brought down today. Was it brought down early in order to avoid some issue or problem while that's up in the sky?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if it was brought down early, but certainly there was a concern about bringing it down so that if on the off chance, you know, some debris scattered up instead of scattered down, that it wouldn't hurt the space shuttle at all.
Noah Shachman is a contributing editor to Wired magazine. I appreciate your time today and your information, Noah. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Joining me now from Rhode Island is Joan Johnson Fries. She's the Department Chair of National Security Studies at the U.S. Naval War College. She's an expert on space programs around the globe, particularly those of China and the U.S. Joan, welcome to you.
Hello, Jane. Thank you for having me.
And also with us from Washington, D.C. is Peter Brooks. He's a senior fellow in national security affairs at the Heritage Foundation. Previously, he worked in the George W. Bush administration as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Asian and Pacific Affairs. Nice to have you, Peter.
Good to be with you, Jane.
Joan, let me start with you. Is the U.S. doing the right thing by shooting down this satellite?
Well, I think we're going to be creating a lot of long-term problems. Given the skepticism from other countries regarding the reason for the U.S. destroying its own satellite, The U.S. may be opening a Pandora's box of thinly veiled excuses for anti-satellite tests and ballistic missile tests that the U.S. will be unable to protest without looking extremely hypocritical.
Peter, what's your take? Long-term problems, Pandora's box here or not?
No, I don't see it that way at all. I think the proximate reason is exactly as the Pentagon has laid it out, that there's potential human cost to not dealing with the satellite. The ships that are being used, these Aegis-class destroyers, which are missile defense capable, the missile that's being used is meant for missile defense. It's not meant for anti-satellite operations. So this is not the case. We're just taking a tool we have in our toolkit to deal with this issue of human safety.
So what about the human safety issue, Joan? Is there, to your mind, a real public safety issue by allowing the satellite to fall from the sky?
Well, we do know that, I mean, there's an average of 100 reentries of large objects each year, and some of the debris survives. There has never been a loss of life due to that so far. And I think if there are statistics that show there's a particular reason for concern with this satellite, it would be very helpful for the Pentagon to release these so that the skepticism can be dealt with. But if China and Russia were to announce a technology development program to defend humanity as a moral imperative, and I use that term specifically because that's how we talk about missile defense, to defend against the 100% certainty of a potential life-threatening asteroid impact, and part of that program included announced destructions of Chinese and Russian deorbiting satellites, is the U.S. going to be okay with that, even if they claim it to be peaceful and to protect human life? I don't think so.
What do you think, Peter? Is there some political gamesmanship going on here, one-upmanship among countries?
No, I think the one thing my colleague is overlooking is what happened a year ago January, when the Chinese launched an anti-satellite rocket to knock down an aging Chinese weather satellite, which was in orbit. This object, this satellite, is uncontrollable, and it's leaving orbit. We will hit it at about 150 miles or so above the Earth's surface. The Chinese satellite last January, in an unannounced test that had no transparency whatsoever, was meant to be an anti-satellite test of itself, was orbiting at 500 miles above the Earth and posed no danger at all to people on the ground. So I think that, you know, if you're talking about opening a Pandora's box, the Chinese already did this. I don't see it as a Pandora's box, but if you're going to take that argument, you're overlooking the fact of what China did last year in an overt exercise of anti-satellite capability.
Well, now that being said, now that China has done it and now that the U.S. has done it, has a precedent been set? Does it now become acceptable to shoot down satellites at the whim or the will of the government, and what are the consequences of that? Joe?
Well, this has been the first anti-satellite test, or the Chinese one was last year. See, I don't see this one as an anti-satellite test, okay? So the U.S. one, that would I'd have to make that clear, that I don't see what we're doing here as an anti-satellite test. This and the ships that are being used, once again, are part of the missile defense system, not part of an anti-satellite system. But what the Chinese did last year, I guess, was the first test in almost 25 years. The United States conducted a number of tests back in the late 1980s and then stopped. So, I mean, there is a definite difference here. People are looking at space. I mean, it is kind of the final frontier. It's increasingly important to advanced militaries today, especially ours, for communications, for targeting, for intelligence. So there's a lot of reasons people are looking at space. I think the reasons the Russians and the Chinese are grousing about it is the fact that the United States still has supremacy in space. I mean, space is already militarized because there are military satellites up there from many, many countries, but it's not weaponized. And I think that's the concern that some of these countries have, that they don't put weapons in space. But already we know that the Chinese are working on and have already exercised an anti-satellite weapon. They're also looking at lasers as well.
Let me get Joan in here to respond to the initial question. Does this set a precedent? Are there consequences of this?
Well, yeah, I think perception becomes the basis upon which other countries act. And the perception from certainly China and Russia is that opportunity knocked for the United States to execute an ASAT and ballistic missile test without the condemnation consequences that they certainly suffered after their certainly foolhardy and reckless test last year. But again, perhaps they are going to think that their mistake was not offering, again, some thinly veiled excuse for why they were doing it rather than overtly testing.
What about this space treaty that China and Russia proposed just this week to restrict space-based defenses? Is that something the United States should agree to, Peter?
I don't think so. There's a lot of questions out there. I mean, there is a space treaty already going back to the 1960s, which talks about the countries not putting weapons of mass destruction in space. But this other one, I mean, it's very ambiguous. There's questions about what defines a weapon. You know, are satellites weapons themselves? I mean, there are some countries that are looking at the concept of putting satellites in space that would, you know, could actually work against other satellites, either through using of lasers. You know, is a laser a weapon? Satellites have lasers on them for distances, for communications purposes, you know, measuring distances between satellites and other things, measuring for sending off communications. How do you verify this? Our country is going to open up and allow you to look at their satellites, their spy satellites, before they put them into space to make sure that they don't have a weapons capability. The treaty proposal does not include anything that's land-based or, you know, ground-based or sea-based. So there's a lot of open questions here. And my view is that Russia and China are trying to diminish the military capabilities between themselves and the United States.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the U.S. military's plan to shoot down an errant spy satellite. I'm joined this hour by Joan Johnson Freeze. She's the Department Chair of National Security Studies at the United States Naval War College. Also with us is Peter Brooks. He's National Security Affairs Senior Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. I mentioned China and Russia's accusations that we're starting a new space arms race. Joan, help us understand what an arms race in space would look like.
Well, space is critical to all kinds of aspects of security. From other countries, space is basically seen as a way to provide connectivity, which is essential in a globalized era for economic development. So space is very important for economic security. From the United States, it's the same, and we are also viewing it additionally far more than other countries in terms of military perspective. It's everything that other countries see it as and more. We've certainly shown the importance of military space assets for military value in everything from the Gulf War in the 1991 to recently the 22-day march to Baghdad. So space assets are very important. The question then becomes, how do you protect those very vulnerable assets? And the approach that's been taken by the United States largely relies on hardware and technology to protect the technology. We have, in fact, as Peter brought up, really avoided getting into more treaties, wanting to maintain maximum flexibility. And this has been viewed by other countries as evidence that the United States not only wants to maintain space superiority, but space dominance, mm-hmm. which they take as threatening and potentially as having a veto over what they want to do in space. And that's created issues regarding how to keep the United States from becoming dominant. Mm.
Peter, what do you make of this notion that we're now one step closer to some sort of arms race in space?
I don't think that we're necessarily at an arms race. I mean, there is a potential. I mean, China and Russia both recognize the importance, as they both advance, of space to military operations. As Joan pointed out, I mean, it's critically important. It's no more important to any country than the United States. And I think China is making efforts that way. The Russians really haven't, will probably move in that direction as well. I mean, Joan may be able to correct me, but I think the Russian way of dealing with satellites is probably putting up a nuclear weapon into space and exploding it. I think that was an early way of dealing with satellites. The electromagnetic pulse of a nuclear explosion in space would knock out all the satellites because of what it would do to the electrical circuits in them. But they're probably going to look at it. But right now, I think that they want to kind of level the playing field with the United States and try to hold us back from protecting our national security. So we have not done things is, I have to keep saying that this test is not an anti-satellite test. Everybody seems to be gravitating towards saying that. I mean, this is being taken down at a low altitude, 150 miles. I mean, a Chinese satellite that was taken down in low Earth orbit was at 500 miles in space. I mean, this is different. We don't have the capability right now from these ships to take out a satellite orbiting at 500 miles above the Earth's surface. We're getting this one as it's descending, and we're not even sure it's going to work, quite frankly.
Joan,
so, I mean, that's very critical to for people to understand that this is a missile defense platform that is going after a satellite. It's kind of, in a sense, it's kind of mixing apples and oranges.
But either way, are there not implications for missile defense and anti-satellite weapons with this move, Joan?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, we need to recognize that the missile that's being used can be modified for higher altitudes. And it's certainly the bottom line is a satellite is going to be destroyed. So there is going to be this destruction. And whether or not the technology can be modified for higher orbits is, you know, not going to be a point that other countries are going to dwell on.
Let's go to the phones now and welcome some listeners to this conversation. First from Billerica, Massachusetts, Gus is on the line. Welcome to you, Gus.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
I'd like to touch a little bit on what Peter was saying about this being a missile defense exercise. The idea that the government story here that this is presents some sort of a danger is really kind of a big farce. We're spending, you know, what, $50 to $100 billion to shoot down something that has an extremely low probability of causing even any property damage, much less hurt anybody. And what I would suggest is that with a coming change of administration, the folks in the military who are in charge of missile defense and their budgets have always had to defend their program because, honestly, it doesn't appear as if it really worked that well. And what I would suggest is that this is really a ploy from the defense industry to continue to pour billions of dollars into a totally unproven method of defending us from a missile attack.
Gus, thank you. Peter, what's your response to Gus's question?
Gus has got the numbers wrong. There have been over 30 successful tests of the missile defense system, over 30 tests just by the United States. Other countries are also looking at it. Israel has done some testing, and so have some others. Japan has done some testing, but there have been over 30 successful tests at different, you know, in fairness, at different levels of difficulty. This is an evolving capability that we have in terms of missile defense. But what happens, let's put the shoe on the other foot here. What happens if we did nothing? And in fact, the Pentagon says, I think, that they think there's only a 50% chance this is actually going to work. So, you know, I mean, they got three ships out there. They're looking at perhaps doing it tomorrow. I guess the weather's not so good today.
Right.
The space shuttle is down. But they've got three ships out there. They're going to, you know, take a couple of shots of this thing. And if it doesn't, it may not work. I mean, I've heard numbers as low as 50%. I mean, I hope it works. I mean, I really do hope it works. But what happens if we don't do anything and this thing lands in China? But as you know, there are several cities in China that have over 30 million people in them, and this is a country of 3 billion people. Of course, the world is covered by 70% water. The chance of it, you know, burning up in the atmosphere, if they destroy this thing, I mean, they really believe that this stuff is going to fall through the atmosphere for another month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what's going to happen here. But what happens if it goes down and it lands in a major city and kills a bunch of people?
But John, to Gus's point, what about this notion that this is just a ploy for the defense industry to pour more money into failed programs?
Well, that certainly is the perception. Missile defense tests, Peter cited some numbers on their success, but I think those test numbers have become a shell game. There are lots of websites up, and everyone gives a different figure for the success rates because certain tests are counted and certain tests aren't. Ones that never get off the pad because of technical difficulties aren't counted. The tests are very scripted. These are not operational tests, so I think that point needs to be kind of taken with a grain of salt. And again, I've heard figures 3% chance that one person could be injured, 1 in 1,000 chance. You know, I'd like to see the Pentagon figures that say that the risk from this particular satellite are so much higher than others that it really needs to be dealt with. And Peter brought up the technology protection or the problem of what if it landed in China. Well, if the problem of it landing in China is not so much that it would injure Chinese population, but that the Chinese would get a hold of the technology, then I think that's what needs to be said. I think that would be a lot more credible that we need to destroy this because it's sensitive technology that we don't want to get in anybody's hands. That, I think, people would buy, and it would lend credibility rather than just build the skepticism as to what this test is all about.
Back to the phones now. And Jesse, who is calling from Augusta, Georgia. Jesse, welcome to you.
How you doing, Jay?
Hi. Well, thank you.
My comment, if China and Russia are having such a big deal about it, and China has the capability to knock down a satellite, why not let them just take the first shot? If we're going to blow it up anyway, and just it would make them a lot happier to get the first shot. It seems like that would make everybody a lot happier.
Okay, Jesse, thanks. So they shot last year. Why not just leave it alone? Why not just let them shoot down their satellite if they wish, Joan?
I'm not sure I understand. Is the suggestion that we should have the Chinese shoot down a U.S. satellite?
I think there was a bit of confusion. But the point is, why respond to China's act? Why if there's anything beyond this being a danger to public safety, why not just let it be?
Well, I think, again, what are the public safety numbers? Why this satellite has to be dealt with differently than other satellites becomes the question.
I think one of the reasons here, I actually agree with Joan about the technology aspect of it. I mean, I thought that was a reasonable thing, but the Pentagon isn't seem to be saying that. That was one of the things that I would be concerned about. But I think this satellite is different in that it was launched into orbit. It was never controllable. It's got this full tank of fuel. Most satellites that deorbit don't have this hydrogen, this very caustic, very poisonous, toxic fuel. I mean, it's got a full fuel tank, and I think that's one of the reasons that makes it different as opposed to others where the fuel has been expended, and that's the reason that they're deorbiting. But this one is unique. It went up into space. It was never operated, and it's got a full fuel tank that could, as we talked about, provide damage or is an issue of human safety.
But, Peter, during reentry, what's chances that the fuel lines wouldn't be ripped out, that the hydrazine wouldn't be burned up in the atmosphere, that it's going to come down with a loaded full tank in a populated area on land, and that, you know, again, that people are going to stand there and breathe it in?
I don't know what those numbers are. I just don't know, and I don't know if any of us do. I mean,
if they were released, I think that would do away with some of the skepticism.
What would do away with some of the skepticism?
If somebody said, here's the chances of the hydrazine tank coming down intact, not burning up in the atmosphere, not the lines not being ripped up, and landing on a populated center, that what are those numbers?
I don't know. I don't know exact numbers. But do you
agree it would take away some of the skepticism if they were released so that they could be checked and verified?
Yeah, but I'm not. See, I agree. They certainly would, but I'm not skeptical in general the way you are about it. So I mean, we're coming from a different position. But sure, I think that the great thing about this, whether you buy the reasons that the Pentagon is doing this or not, there has been transparency, as opposed to what we saw with China last year, where they didn't tell us about the launch. We found out about it. China's, some of the space debris that's up there that China, from the satellite that China knocked out, is going to be up there for 100 years.
Well, talk about that. Talk a little bit about that, Joan and Peter. Actually, Joan, you talk about a worst-case scenario where the strength of the impact of shooting this satellite out of the sky will actually throw debris to a higher orbit. Tell us why that would be a problem.
Well, I think one of the things the Chinese test showed was that the models for space debris distribution aren't 100% accurate, that we need better models because the predictions for where it would go certainly haven't held 100% on point. So while the United States is certainly taking the more responsible position and destroying it in a lower orbit in a way that hopefully most of the debris will come down rather than go up, you can't be sure that some of the debris won't be thrown to a higher orbit where there are satellites and where the space station operates. I think that it's a consideration that you can't guarantee won't happen.
Chris is now calling from Westford, Massachusetts. Hi, welcome, Chris, to our conversation.
Hi, Jane. Thanks.
Hi, sure.
The thing that strikes me about this, as I've been following this in the past week, is the lack of critical thinking from the media. I've scoured sites. I've read everything I can because this just stood out to me as not adding up. And I've seen nothing but parroting of the administration and the Pentagon's, story, except until this show, really, and I'm grateful for that, and I hope this is going to continue more critical thinking. But, the technical arguments for the risk to human life are specious. I think we've covered that. And for $60 million, can anybody here think of a, you know, no other ways that we can help save human lives? You know, healthcare, body armor for soldiers. You know, we've lost 1.2 million Iraqis. I don't see any hand-wringing in the government about that.
Chris, thank you so much for your call. Joan, your response to Chris, has there been a lack of critical thinking, especially on the media's part, critical analysis about this?
Well, I've been talking to a lot of media over the past couple of days, and I think the media is trying to investigate what is there more to this story than what the government's talking about, and they are asking for they're certainly asking me about the statistics and why this is different. And you know, I think there's also a lot more coverage. We need to understand there's a lot more coverage of U.S. space activities in foreign newspapers sometimes than there is in the United States. There certainly was more coverage of an analysis of the U.S., the national space policy that came out in 2006 abroad than there was in the United States.
Yeah. Back to the phones before we go to our break. Charles is in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Charles, welcome to you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm somewhat confused about the amount of attention that's been given to this issue. Given that the United States has already proven technology to be able to shoot out of the sky an incoming warhead, which I don't know from personal knowledge, but it seems as though that would be technically difficult, more difficult than shooting a satellite. Just seems to me that any Russian or Chinese criticism is disingenuous, and the previous caller actually bringing up the fact that we're spending $60 million on this exercise is probably the most concerning aspect of this story.
Thank you, Charles, for your call. Joan, Charles is saying Russia and China's protests are somewhat disingenuous.
Well, there are different aspects to this test. Again, most of the ballistic missile tests have been very, very highly scripted. And this will be an uncontrolled satellite, bigger than most missile defense targets, but also traveling at a much higher speed than most of those targets. So there will be things to be learned from this test that we haven't been able to test previously.
Peter, what do you think?
I think one of the things that we haven't brought up yet is the fact that this is a pretty risky undertaking by the Pentagon. What happens if they miss? What happens if they don't? We're just kind of taking for granted that they're going to hit it.
What will happen if they miss?
Well, that's the thing. The reason that they're deploying three ships, not just deploying one ship to the Pacific, to the region out there. They probably have a limited number of standard missile threes, which is the missile that's used for missile defense.
Yeah.
And if they miss, it could undermine their efforts towards moving forward to missile defense.
Joan, how easy will it be then to say that, missile defense is totally ineffective?
Well, there have been arguments all along that missile defense is an answer that won't work to a problem that doesn't exist, and that hasn't stopped it so far in, more than $60 billion in expenditures. But I think Peter is right. If we miss on this, it's going to be, at the very least embarrassing, but we will learn a great deal in terms of the technology.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about space relations and the U.S. military's plan to shoot down a spy satellite. I'm joined by Joan Johnson Freeze. She's the Department Chair of National Security Studies at the U.S. Naval War College. Also, Peter Brooks is with us. He's a Senior Fellow in National Security Affairs at the Heritage Foundation. Right now, I'd like to bring another voice into our conversation. Jeff Forden joins me in the studio. He's a research scientist at MIT's Program on Science, Technology, and Society. He's been following closely the government's plan to bring down this satellite. Jeff, welcome to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've done the calculations on this military maneuver from a scientific perspective. What are the chances that this satellite actually poses a danger?
Well, there are a lot of very difficult calculations to make that I haven't done. But if you assume that the hydrazine tank makes it down to the Earth's surface, there's actually about 3.5% chance of killing or injuring someone.
And is that a high enough percentage chance, to your mind, to actually shoot it out of the sky?
Well, I think it's a bad policy decision to shoot it down. But I don't think It's a crazy thing to do because of that. I think 3.5% is a large number.
What are the chances that the military is actually going to hit this thing?
I listened to Mr. Brooks, and I thought when he said it was about 50% chance yesterday, I would have agreed with him. I've had a chance to do some more work on that, and I think it's considerably better than 50-50. The point is there are two things that are essentially fighting each other, and one is that it is moving at a much greater speed than the previous tests, more than double the speed. That's a very significant test. I mean, feature. For instance, if you make a correction 1 second before impact, that thing is still 10 kilometers away, and you have to hit something that is essentially the size of a bus at 5 miles. Mm.
So it's traveling faster. It's higher.
It's higher. Well, actually, it will probably be lower than most missile defense engagements it would be. But the thing that makes it easier to hit is the satellite is going to be brought in from a portion of its orbit where it's fully in the sun. It'll be heated up. It'll be very bright in the infrared. And I think that the detector on the interceptor will be able to see it, mm-hmm. from at least 1,000 kilometers. Mm. And that'll be a significant advantage.
So if the satellite is actually hit, then technically what happens after that? What about the debris? Could that debris possibly fall to Earth? Is it left to float out into space? You know, what happens?
Well, the debris will definitely fall to Earth. In fact, 12% of it will fall to Earth within 2 or 3 minutes. Because it's knocked down, it doesn't. At that low an altitude, it doesn't take a lot to change its orbit so that it essentially falls right to Earth. Now, 80% of it will stay in orbit for maybe a month. You know, it'll fall down. Most of it will fall down in the next day, but 80% of it will fall down within the next month. And then you have another 6%, I think it is, that will stay in orbit for maybe a year. Now, that's the highest orbit debris. Some of this stuff will be kicked up to orbits that are, say, 2,700 kilometers in altitude, which mm-hmm. is much higher mm-hmm. than the original satellite, and it's much higher than the space station, for instance.
And what are the consequences of that?
Well, there aren't too many pieces knocked up that high, as I said. But they will have a chance of hitting other satellites. I'd like to say that this is nowhere near as bad for polluting the space environment as the Chinese test was. That test created thousands of pieces big enough to be seen from Earth, and then hundreds of thousands of pieces smaller that can't be seen to Earth. And they will be in orbit for thousands of years, not the 100 years, but thousands of years.
How did this happen in the first place, Professor? This is a multi-billion-dollar satellite that was dead on arrival the minute it hit space more than a year ago.
Right.
Is this a design flaw? What happened?
Well, every engineering project has its problems. I think one has to expect things like this in space. What's almost criminal, however, is that we're forced to be in this sort of policy choice. If they had put in some sort of device that would have released the hydrazine, say, after a month of no contact with Earth, then this wouldn't be an issue.
You've heard our previous guests talk about the potential for an arms race in space after this maneuver by the U.S. military. What are your thoughts about that, having studied everything you have from a scientific perspective?
Right. Well, I find this to be a very hard policy choice to make. I mean, because the chances of killing or injuring someone is so great, I was very troubled by that. However, I think that Mr. Brooks essentially proved that we're starting an arms race in space when he said the Chinese did this first. Mm-hmm. Every step of an arms race is just like that. People say, I'm not doing such a big step, and it's necessary for my security. And besides, they did it first.
Let's go back to the phones now for some more perspective. Dennis is in San Angelo, Texas. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Actually, I think your most recent guest just stole my thunder. I was going to point out to Joan that the reason they can't get any hard numbers on where it's going to land or any percentages is because once things start sloughing off the satellite as it enters the atmosphere, it's going to start tumbling, and it's not anywhere near aerodynamic enough to be able to predict once it starts doing that where it's going to go, because the tumble will change its course. It'll cause it to slow down, speed up at times. There's just no way to know.
Is that right, Joe?
That's absolutely true. In fact, it depends on the sun's activity. There's all these sorts of calculations. Now, I'm hoping the government knows a great deal more about both the state of the solar activity and the shape of the satellite. But I still think that, well, if you take the publicly available knowledge, one can only say it's going to decay into orbit within the next, but somewhere between 4 days from now and 2 weeks from now. Now, it covers it goes around the entire surface of the Earth many, many times in that. So you're absolutely right that it's very difficult to predict where it's going to hit.
Another question from Paul, who is in Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Paul. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
The question I have is about the debris in orbit, the Chinese debris that appears to be there for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and some of the debris from this satellite, assuming it's successful, that may be there for a long time. Do new space shots have to worry about that debris in terms of, does it hamper their programs, or does it hamper the navigation that they've got to do to set up new satellites or to do other kinds of space shots?
Good question, Paul. What about other, I think you meant space shuttles and other satellites?
Space shuttles, satellites, the space station. All of them have to worry about that. In fact, that's why they waited until the shuttle touched down before they even would think about shooting it, because it would create probably a low probability of a thing, but still low is greater than zero.
Owen is in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Owen, welcome to you.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
You know, I was just thinking about where is the congressional oversight? This is nothing to do with the Iraq war. I know they don't like congressmen telling generals what to do in Iraq, but I don't see what is so urgent about this that the government can't look into it.
Owen, thank you. Let's go back to Peter Brooks or Joan Johnson-Freeze. Either one of you want to touch that?
Well, my sense is that having worked on Capitol Hill as a staffer years ago is that there are oversight committees. I think this would probably fall into the Armed Services Committee on both sides of the Capitol here. And my sense is having worked in the Pentagon and having worked on the Hill, is that there probably were briefings given to members of Congress and senators and their staffs about this sort of issue, where they could have raised questions. I don't know that those briefings took place, but my sense is that since something's so much in the press, and considering congressional prerogatives, that the oversight committees and maybe appropriations committees were probably briefed by a member of the legislative affairs staff at the Pentagon and subject matter experts from the mm-hmm. Pentagon.
Arthur is calling now from Lexington, Massachusetts. Arthur, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. I agree pretty much with all your guests and several callers, and especially Jeff from MIT. At first, I thought perhaps this was a propaganda stunt by the administration, because there's a total lunar eclipse today, and I had understood that, or tonight, and I understood that possibly they would make the shot tonight. But now I hear that they're probably not going to shoot tonight, so that's by the boards. However, I think the main issue is security. They certainly don't want to have any of this material to fall in the hands of our enemies. The second thing, it's propaganda for the missile defense system. They know exactly where that satellite is. They've been tracking it ever since it failed. They've been imaging it. They know whether it's tumbling or whatever it's doing. And it's like shooting a fish in a barrel. And if they don't hit it, it will be an embarrassment. And that's why there are three ships out there that have more than one missile.
Joan Johnson-Freeze, would you care to respond?
Well, again, if this is a technology protection issue, I think that the public would be very willing to accept that. I know I certainly would. But I think, again, it's the skepticism comes from the way it's being portrayed. And I think when you have scientists like Jeff Forden who can give us all this information, it would be very helpful if the government gave us this information. It would do away with a lot of the skepticism. And perception is important.
Samantha is now on the line from Augusta, Georgia. Samantha, welcome to you.
Hey. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I was wondering, since we are, China and Russia are protesting the fact that we're even considering shooting this satellite down, even though China has done it previously, What exactly is going to be the aftermath if we do actually shoot it down? What exactly is going to be the aftermath of our relationship with Russia and China?
Diplomatically, Joan, Samantha wonders what's going to happen from here.
Well, the Russian Foreign Ministry has already spoken out, and in fact, there may be protests to the United Nations or something of that sort, but I don't think there will be any specific reaction beyond the diplomatic realm, other than getting into this potential space race where, unfortunately, the United States is going to be technologically racing against itself because, oh, I disagree with Peter that the other countries are trying to reach parity in terms of space capabilities with the United States. I think their goal is more to thwart U.S. plans to be space dominant. So that dominance requires that the U.S. always be able to not only have offensive but all the defensive capabilities as well, and that's very difficult.
Bob now, who is in Woodstock, Virginia. Bob, welcome to the conversation.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to bring up the point that I feel the money-wise, I know that's a serious issue with many people, the $60 million or however much it's going to cost, but has anyone ever considered that if we do nothing, we've already talked about possibly shooting it down, but say it lands in the middle of Los Angeles. Now we've got how many billion dollars of liability lawsuits against the government because they could have taken a chance but didn't. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Hmm. Bob, thank you. Peter or Joan, a double-edged sword here? They have to do something.
I mean, that was my point earlier. Perhaps I wasn't as eloquent as I could have been, but the caller got it right nailed on the head. I mean, what happens if we don't do anything and there is a loss of human life? I mean, our other colleague panelist said that 3.5% was a little too high for him, for his comfort. And so it is a lot of money. I was actually surprised at the numbers that I've seen. I don't know if they're accurate or not, of this test costing $60 million. I don't know if that includes every sailor who's on the ship deployed and or, you know, what's involved in that number. That sometimes these numbers can be deceiving. But the fact of the matter is if we can take care of this issue and prevent any loss of human life, I think that's a good thing. But if we don't do anything, imagine the recriminations that will go around over that when we
Jeff
could
Gordon?
Have had the possibility of doing something.
Jump in.
Well, there's a couple of interesting points that Peter has made. I was also a congressional staffer, and I worked on understanding the budget for missile defense tests. And you're right, $60 million is much more than the interceptor. But what it must include is all of the data sensors and data taking to take information about the interception. While this might not be an ASAT test, it is certainly an ASAT engagement, and we will use and collect whatever data is available, and my guess is that $40 million of those are going into collecting that data. Mm-hmm. Now, as for allowing the satellite to land, splash down, I suppose I should say,
mm-hmm.
Suppose it hit Los Angeles. Probably something like less than 50 people would be injured by it. It would contaminate a region that would be about the size of a half of a football field. This is very bad. I absolutely agree. I'm very worried about that. But it's also not the long-term dangers that one would perhaps be afraid of, because you could clean up a half a football field.
One last call before our hour is up. Michael is on the phone from Ames, Iowa. Michael, welcome.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One thing that I've been listening to and what has been neglected, you know, we have the space shuttle, and what amazes me, we put so much money into the development of this spy satellite, and why didn't we ever try to retrieve it? We've known that it's been non-functional, this satellite. Why didn't we ever plan for that particular plan of action?
All right, Michael, thank you. Jeff Forden, is it possible to fix this satellite, to take it in?
One would think, I mean, we have gone up with the shuttle and captured a satellite that's slightly failing. We certainly captured the Hubble Space Telescope and fixed it. But if it's at all tumbling, and I mean tumbling very slowly, it'd be too dangerous to approach the shuttle. And I assume this is tumbling maybe once or twice a second.
Hmm. I have about a minute left, and I'll turn to Joan Johnson-Fries and Peter Brooks for final thoughts on a very interesting hour. Joan, you first.
Well, I think the good news from all this is that more or less the United States is setting de facto rules for any future ventures of this type by announcing it, by working through the UN, notifying other countries. And whereas the United States has really resisted any kind of rules in the past, it has de facto created some which other countries and the U.S. as well will be held to in the future.
Peter, 30 seconds. I have to go.
I guess my question would be is that if the shoe were on the other foot, if this were a Russian or Chinese satellite, they don't have the capability, I don't think, to bring one down, and they decided to engage it, what would we be saying here in the United States? That this was the right thing to do for humanitarian purposes, or this was a problem of national security, or we're opening up an arms race? That'd be very interesting to see if it was a Chinese or a Russian satellite that they were going to engage and try to destroy before it hit the ground.
My thanks to all my guests today, Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation, Joan Johnson Fries from the United States Naval War College, and here in studio, Jeff Forden from MIT's Program on Science. Thanks very much to all of you for your time and thoughts. You can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.